Hello and welcome once again to Glam City. This is our second season. We're very excited to be bringing you 20 episodes in 2018. And if you like what you hear, you can of course go to our archive. But if you're wondering what Glam City is and who you are briefly, well, I'm going to tell you what we are here to do is to lift the curtain and to take you behind the scenes to reveal the marvellous archivists, the curious curators and the purveyors of cultural heritage who are working in galleries, libraries, archives and museums across Sydney and across Australia. That's what the glam sector is. And I am Tamsin Peach, here again alone in the studio, abandoned by Anna Hope Clark, but I'm about to abandon her, so that's fine. We say hello to you, Anna, across the airwaves. But I'm not entirely alone because I'm here with Ross Brusetzi from NIDA. If you've ever wondered what those fantastic 19th century costumes from live theatre performances go, they go to NIDA. Is that right, Ross?
Well, yes, they do.
Some of
they
them.
Go into storage, as much as I'm aware. We do have a storage facility off-site at Alexandria with loads of costumes. However, that repository is about to be shut down and we have to move everything back to NIDA. But the answer to that in a simple term is yes.
Yes, well, it was a yes-no answer question, but we got there. So, Ross, you are the manager, the library manager
yes, that's
at
correct.
NIDA.
That's correct.
And NIDA is, as everyone knows, the National Institute for Dramatic Arts,
yes.
where all of the famous Australian, well, not all of them, but many of our musicians and actors and have trained.
Yes.
How long have you been in that role?
I've been there since, in that role, well, not as manager, but as a librarian, since the 8th of January 1996. That's 22 years.
That's a long time.
It wasn't my intention to stay for that long, but that's how it's worked out. Because, you know, you're there for 2 years and then suddenly, you know, you think you'll be moving on, but then there's a grant for stage two of the building and then there's a new library, so you wait and then there's more staff, more authority, etc., etc. So it's worked out quite well.
So what got you into it in the first place? I mean, you trained in librarian studies.
I did.
And then why NIDA?
Okay. I guess there's a couple of reasons for that. For one thing, personally, I'm a musician and I love the creative arts. So my interest is in music performance, also literature and writing to a lesser degree, but there's still an interest. Libraries themselves, I think that, you don't go to university thinking I'm going to be a librarian. You know, you go to study to get some world life experience and, of course, some education as well. But an aesthetic creeps in that you like the libraries and you like, you know, in your own quiet way, and this can only be me, you just like the structure of libraries, how they're organised, and it grows on you.
Well,
you
so know. That's fascinating. What do you mean by that? You like the structure of...
You like to see the shelves of books, the way, you know, even the citation indexes with all this kind of quiet but full knowledge, like pages and pages. They don't exist anymore, by the way,
no.
Citation indexes. But in a small way, it's not that you go home thinking of citation indexes, but you like it. Okay, so that's kind of in the background. After I finished my arts degree, I went
Sorry,
off
I want to just take that out.
Yes.
So it's the order? It's the order of...
There's a sense of order. There's a sense of peace. I mean, there's a gentleness as well. But there's also a sense of...
A gentleness in...
In the feeling of a library,
uh-huh.
I mean, it's subtle. It's like a cloud in a sense, a puffy cloud. But there's also, as I said, structure, organisation, and it feeds a technical side of your mind.
Yeah, yeah.
Organisation.
So a sort of combination of the aesthetic of what it feels like to be
yes.
in the space, but also then how that makes your brain feel because... information is being codified and regulated and it's not messy. It's rendering the chaos ordered.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, yeah, you know, as I said, you're not thinking of being a librarian immediately, but after a few years out of uni, I decided to go back and do the librarian course. As it turns out, my sister and my brother, who are a lot older than me, and we're very different personalities, got into libraries too. My sister got into, became a library technician in 1975. I think she started working at Waverley Library. My brother's still working at Waverley Library. But, you know, I won't go into the malfamily
Christmas
background.
Must be thrilling.
But we're very different personalities too, you know. So that's why I got into libraries.
What does NIDA have in their library?
Okay.
Your library.
What we do is cater to the core courses of NIDA primarily. And by core courses, that's obviously the Master of Fine Arts, Bachelor of Fine Arts courses. Then we get into VET, Vocational Educational Training. And then the Open Studio, who can borrow. So we're really catering to them. And of course, that's...
So what's the Open Studio?
Well, we have the open courses. And there is the studio are the part-time rather than the casual element. And they're there for about a year. But the Sydney people can borrow. Everyone else who are interstate or young actors can use the online resources. But what we do have is loads of plays and then scholarly texts relating to theatre and drama practitioners, other subjects relating to drama such as directing, writing for performance, dramaturgy. Then we do have a lot of costume design. We have plenty of music scores too because our acting students have an elective Bachelor of Fine Arts and that's in music theatre, and there is a VET course dedicated to musical theatre as well. The architecture of the library remains the same as it was when I started. That was created by Christine Roberts, who was there from, she started the library in 1980 and left in 2009, but she did an extraordinary job. And what she, one of the things she did was separate the plays from the scholarly texts. So we have loads of plays in one section, ostensibly in alphabetical order, Australian, international, but then some are in title order if they're collected works.
And do you have like visual archives as well?
Yeah, we do. We obviously have DVDs and we have CDs. We also have an internal streaming service where we have those. You know, as most people do, ours is DVC. Is a company we're with at the moment, and we have our production archives in there for internal use only.
And so obviously students are using this all the time. Is it kind of library where, you know, they're there at 3 in the morning?
No, because we're not open at 3. But we are open till 8 p.m. for 3 nights a week and open up at 8:30 in the morning for 3 mornings a week. So, yeah, they do use the library for those 11 and a half hours.
So you've obviously got a buying policy then too to keep the library going.
Yes.
What lines of direction does that, did you have a specialisation in Australian plays? Is there?
Yeah. Well, again, you know, with the buying, I'm always running it by the teaching staff as to making sure that I'm in the right direction. With the play collection, and the good news about plays, the publishers are becoming more ethnocentric, which is great. So even though you have a very Anglo publishing house such as Bloomsbury in London, the plays that they're publishing are coming in towards an international bent, Pakistani plays, Indian plays, and so forth, South African plays. And that's a good thing. In terms of buying, the British publishers, they specialise with, say, they have partnerships with the National Theatre in London, and they're quite sought after plays. So we're fairly Anglo-centric in that sense of publishing houses. With American publishers, there's Samuel French Dramatic Service. I've got Dramatic Publishing Service. And also Theatre Communications Group. And they're quite good. So with the plays, we go along that bent. But there's also the other aspect, and that's ebooks. And any ebooks that are on our ebook platform, and we buy through ProQuest. In fact, we don't buy the plays or we don't buy ebooks. We put them up onto our catalogue, and then if anyone uses them, then we have to pay for it at that point.
Yeah, this is a brave new world of, you know, electronic books and libraries. Sometimes when I've been accessing a ebook online, you're only allowed to have 2 people or 3 people. There's a license about how many people can read it at the same time. Mm. And that's a problem if you've got a class of 150 students and an assignment due in a week's time. Is that sort of also playing out at NIDA?
It can, but most of the licenses, not all, because some of the licenses are, as you say, they're 3-user license or 1-user license. But mostly they're called non-linear. It's a non-linear license, meaning that you have 325 days of use. So if 10 students use it for 30 days, you've used up 300 days. And if you go over, you need to buy the ebook again. And after 1 calendar year, it refreshes and goes back to 325 days of use.
Like, what does the librarian in you that liked the aesthetic of the library and the order think about this electronic turn?
Look, you know, good question. Because, yeah, I liked what I told you about coming into a library in 1988 still applies. But, you know, the great thing about being in a job is that you're working and suddenly you are slowly but stealthily, you are having to deal with electronic infrastructures. You become an IT specialist or you're forced to.
In many ways, in advance of other sectors. I mean, yeah. The librarians have been doing IT stuff, you know, for decades, haven't you?
Yeah, you do. You do, because obviously you've got your own platforms for, you know, management services for libraries, you know, borrowers and all the books are in the catalogue, as it were. Yes, yes. Well, there's more now because of the ebook platforms, because of databases that are very library-centric, such as Drama Online and what Bloomsbury are doing with that. So Drama Online, for example, is magnificent. It's the sort of thing you dream about, and it's come to life where you have a platform of eminently readable plays. It's not just an ebook. They're readable. The words in the Shakespeare text, the Arden third series Shakespeare text, are hyperlinked, so you don't have to go to the bottom of the page. So the annotations come through. You have different play tools. They offer LA Theatre Works. They offer the Globe Shakespeare Review, amongst other things. So there's some fabulous stuff out there. And, you know, the difference too is that the platforms, in a sense, are easier to use because now, as you know from looking at websites, how different they are to how they were, say, last decade. They're not clunky. They're almost art house. You almost have to figure out what a symbol means, but it's designed to make you feel that you're in a lounge room and you're very comfortable. It's a very IKEA-looking thing, isn't it?
Interesting, yeah.
As we know. But where, from a library point of view, what we have to really be aware of is any change in a server or anything the IT guys are doing in the back, whatever, you can lose, touch with the product, meaning suddenly someone can't access this at home or whatever it may be. So all those authentications, such as, you know, being able to access the product from home or the ebook, you really have to keep an eye on that. That's becoming a 24-hour job, funnily enough.
I mean, the other bit about that might be particular to performing arts, and when we think about resources like library resources, is surely the hard copy really matters. Like when you're in early stages of a rehearsal and you don't know your lines yet and you're walking up and down the stage, you need the hard copy in front of you in a way that you don't if you're doing your scholarly essay or something. You know, then the hyperlinked version on your desktop is fine. What happens in that sort of performing space?
Well, what we do as a policy is that, and you know, we're very much sticklers for copyright, and we do work with a copyright agency limited, but we buy the texts for the students to use, because that's absolutely correct. I mean, Drama Online have a play tools element where you can look at a graph of all the characters and all the acts or scenes, and there are circles within those particular cells, and the larger the circle, the more words they have, and you double click it and out come all their lines for that scene. So that's one way people can learn their lines, but really the book is the thing.
Yeah,
you know, there's no getting away from it. I mean, books won't go away until the trees go, but until that, the books will stay.
And it's a very embodied, you know, undertaking to perform music or put on a play.
Yeah, of course it is.
So that materiality. I mean, I remember attending a scholarly paper given by someone that was researching how Shakespeare plays were performed. And they were suggesting that the actors were only given their lines and maybe the five words of the character beforehand. Obviously, paper is at a premium. And so they would have all their lines in one go with just these intros and only walk on when they heard the lines. And sometimes that meant they walked on at the total wrong moment. And so the play was a much more piecemeal in some ways experience for the actors who came and went. And it doesn't sound dissimilar to the electronic version with the circles that you were just talking about.
Yes, yes, yes. It's funny how things go in a circle over, you know, the period of 500 years or... But, I mean, in Shakespeare's day, I think that, you know, even if it's a tragedy, in a sense it was just an event like going to a pub.
Right.
And watching a play, and it didn't matter if the audience was rowdy or not, you know, because they were down in the pit. But of course, it's a lot more. That's a lot more. That side of things is a lot more formalised now.
You're listening to Glam City on 2SER 107.3. To download this show, head to the 2SER website or check out your favourite podcast app. We love all the apps, and search for Glam City. That's G-L-A-M, Glam City. And don't forget to leave us a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts. It really helps other people to find us. Now, on this episode of Glam City, we are talking all things dramatic and artistic with Roz Brzezinski, who's from the library at the National Institute of Dramatic Art, that is better known as NIDA. Now, Ross, earlier in the show, you said that you were interested in music.
Yes.
What is your particular instrument of choice?
Well, I played last night, actually. I muck around. I mean, I did music at uni, but really, back then, that would have been an equivalent to a liberal arts course. I didn't specify in any one instrument. I didn't play music as a child. It just kind of came to me. I started playing recorder at age 12, as we all do, and I became obsessed with it. So the music teacher told my mum he should play music, yeah, etc. She was Mrs. Zavotnik. And I played violin. I wasn't good at that at all. I played trombone because we had free lessons back then. But really, it's when and then I played clarinet, which I liked a lot. But these days I started piano at age 20, I hired a piano and learnt, took lessons for 2 years, and I try and play a bit every day. I'm not a great player, but I'm good enough to get on stage and play a song, etc. And really, my instruments, I love bass, and playing bass is, the way I like to play bass is to play, say, the Bach cello suites or some of them, not the ones that are too hard or go too high, or the left hand of the preludes, the 2-3 part preludes. So I played bass, but really now I'm playing acoustic guitar and piano. And my partner, she sings and she plays keyboards, and she plays a lot of little squeezy instruments such as all the harmonica and then the melodica.
Does she play the accordion?
No, not that squeezy. Oh, she could if she would.
It's my dream. So you said you had a gig.
What? I did last night. Yeah, we played at Lazy Bones Lounge in Marrickville.
And what sort of music is your thing? It sounds like you straddle the classical.
I like the back of the. I like the. You could say classical is a bit of a back end thing for me. I like to practice classical. Nothing too hard, mind you, but I do like practicing classical on an instrument. But I don't play classical at all. I play, contemporary music with a bit of a blues and a jazz element to it.
And it was interesting to me you said that this was a thing that you came to in school, and that your music teacher, I'm guessing you went to a public school, state school?
I went to a Catholic school.
A Catholic school, yeah. Yeah. And there was music lessons in as part of the curriculum, is that right?
I think for me, because I did music throughout school, but at school it was really just a safety valve. So it was good to just go to the music department and just get away from it and find my own aesthetic,
yeah,
as we talked about, and discover new things. But that was the magic of school looking back, because I think English did the same thing for me in year 11 when you're reading Pride and Prejudice and other Knowles, and this is like, wow, what a new world this is.
And drama often does that too.
And drama does that too, yes, yeah. Yes. But, I mean, the way I see myself is that I think the reason, one of the reasons it's worked so well for me and it's fit at NIDA is because I love the theatre. I'm enamoured of it. I'm awed by what these students do. And they're wonderful students. I mean, they're such good people, bright and so enthused. But I'm not a theatre practitioner. I mean, I said I'm a musician and I like a bit of literature. So in a sense, I'm a cousin to what they do. But because I'm not a theatre practitioner, I don't want to kind of know who's directing this or that. There's a healthy detachment. I can just do my job. But I understand. I get it. I fit, and that's where I think it's worked out quite well.
I've been going to some of the Belvoir productions,
yes,
and they've got a new playwriting scheme there. Is there an attempt to sort of collect that kind of material that's coming? We were talking earlier about overseas big publishing houses and publishing in English, but there is this sort of stream of local talent that,
yes,
is being fostered.
Yes.
How does that make its way into the library? I mean, some of those people might in fact come out of NIDA.
Yeah. Well, one way is, you can look at our students for one thing, and we do have a writing for directing masters. And the master's courses go for 15 months. The master's in writing for performance is led, or the head of department is Stephen Sewell, who's a major Australian playwright. Now, the plays get performed at the end of the year, often with the papers, but that's okay because the actors come in and stand in and perform them. Some of those students stay on and get commissioned to write a play for our performance seasons. We have two performance seasons per year for acting students and, of course, the costumers and designers to create the sets and so forth. Other than that, there is another database called AustralianPlays.org, and they are a repository of non-published Australian playwrights where you can go in and read a script five times for a maximum of 5 hours each time. And there's also the publishing houses Currency and La Mama, and sometimes our graduates are writers. So I think, especially since Stephen's come in, there is a very healthy push to bring Australian, or say graduates, but also just young Australian playwrights to fulfil their talents and get their work out there, because I can see that it is happening.
Yeah, I mean, and that sort of brings us to the question of the future of the performing arts in Australia. And why do you think that it is, what role do they have in our cultural life?
Well, I mean, it's a good question, and sometimes you have to look at that from the ground up. I mean, from the ground up, I'll start with my own. And why do I play music? Why do I read? Why do I work in a library, a performing arts library? Because there's passion, because you want to do it. And our students who come to NIDA, they're going to have to want to do it because they have to work very hard. But when you love something and you have an innate talent for it, the hardness is part of the joy. The difficulties are part of the joy. So yeah. That means that you have people out there who are doing. Now, whether they're doing it for professionally or non-professionally, the fact is that there's always a ferment of, in this case, as you said, performing artists. Now, that finds its way in the culture. It can't help but not. Even if you have a very reactionary government or whatever it might be, there's always scope. Now, one of the courses that they do teach at NIDA since about 2013 or so is collaboration, introduction to collaboration, because students are encouraged to collaborate and find their own way, not just wait for the agent to pick them up or whatever, which is still valid and still, you know, encouraged. But on the other side of things is go out and create your own art, and you are given the skills to bring it to some kind of fruition as well. So the answer is that performing arts are here to stay. I mean, you look at any culture, I mean, any culture that you may have read about or travelled and seen, there is a performing arts aspect to humanity.
Look, and I can't agree with you more, but the kind of conditions that foster, that support or don't support that do shape it. You know, if
yes.
We think about Australia in the 50s and 60s, in the era of censorship, you know, before the Australia Council, or even earlier, before the ABC Orchestra got off the ground, like, although there was plenty of activity, the kind of landscape for realising that was much curtailed than it is now. And so how do you think, you know, if we look at the influence of the lockout laws in Sydney too, they've had a huge effect on the music scene and the performing arts scene.
Yeah.
I mean, are you seeing your students get political around advocating for these sorts of structures and legislative reform?
I personally haven't. I keep an eye out for, you know, these like that lockout law is a great example. But then I think, is there another avenue that people can go through? You know, in that point about the 50s and 60s is very interesting. See, what happens, of course, is that you have the era and then something new breaks out. Now, I guess what happened in Australia, the early 70s, I think La Mama in Melbourne was a very pioneering place. And suddenly, like Williamson's
La Mama, of course, being the theatre company in Carlton. Yeah?
In Melbourne.
Melbourne in Carlton,
yes,
yeah.
Yes. And the plays that were coming out there were quite of the time, and the language within the plays was, the dialogue, for example, was quite new. And then, of course, you had the explosion, and then you had the 70s and David Williams's Removalists and The Club and The Coming of Stork. All those plays were, Don's Party, were quite revolutionary. I don't know the answer of where that ferment of talent finds its, you know,
it will erupt. Comes,
exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
It does seem to me that there's a real, we're on the edge of a real return to these kinds of embodied forms of performance.
Yes.
The more we live in a digital world, and if you think too about the effects of something like Amazon, a lot of companies are investing very heavily to counter Amazon in customer experience. Which is a thing you can only get by going into the store.
Yes.
And
yes.
It seems that you know, the return of festivals and gigs, yes, as and as the way, and performances as the way that bands make money is a sort of corollary to that.
Mm.
So I'm kind of excited to see, yep, what's going to happen.
Yes.
And I guess I was just wondering how we make that not just a process that is artistic,
yes,
but also is a process that's about what kind of society we want to live in, and that,
yes,
is political, and that is saying, well, how can we foster these things?
Yes, yes. Interesting you say that and ask that, because just in the waiting room, take a photo of a Paddington Town Hall record fair, and there were bands and everything. This was 1983, and I thought, God, those were the good old days. Because, you know, they're just, it's like you mentioned the library, and we talked about the aesthetic of it. Like, I walk into my public library on the weekend to borrow a book, and I'm not at NIDA, I'm just a customer. And there's a sense of fulfillment being there and receiving what you want. Like, so that information, the books are there, this is going to be great. And yeah, we all love live theatre, and we love live music, and it's still present. So it doesn't go away. But I know that in this day and age, there are barriers, say, compared to how things were perhaps in the 80s and 90s. Is that your
yeah,
point?
Yeah. And I'm like, well, you know, let's break down the barriers, or let's get political as well as being about making, because we don't make culture in a vacuum. We make it in a political and economic
we do.
Context.
That's right.
Now, speaking of our social context, we're,
yes,
coming to the end of the show, and there's our Glam Slam segment where we ask you what's coming up in your cultural calendar.
Well, you know, in terms of the library, there's going to be a lot of moving, which doesn't sound like fun. For myself, I've got a couple of gigs coming up, Lazy Bones Lounge and Gasoline Pony, both in Marrickville. We have the play productions coming up in June, which I'm looking forward
yeah,
to.
Tell
because.
Us,
Well, we've got Waiting for Godot,
oh, well,
which will be
favorite.
quite a... I mean, I haven't seen that. And we've got The Removalists by David Williamson. So that'll be interesting to see how far they get back into not just the costuming and the vernacular of that, but to see if they can get back to a spirit of an era and us as an audience. It's as if we're back in 1972 and this is really new. Waiting for Godot, I will be looking at that as if to say, wow, this is a French existential play from the 50s. So, you know, we look at it almost, but, you know, theatre being theatre, you engage yourself into it. There'll be a newly commissioned work, which is fantastic. We often do that.
And all of the public can attend any of these?
They can. They just need to book via Ticketek through the NIDA website.
NIDA website. Brilliant. Thank you very much for joining us here on Glam City. Thank you, Ross. If you'd like to hear more of us, head to the 2SCR website. You can check out our back catalogue. You can find me on Twitter as Cap and Gown, and Anna Clark is there at Anna Hope Clark. She'll be seizing the microphone from next week. Shoot us an email at glamcity@2scr.com, and we will see you all next week. Well, you'll hear us, actually. Bye for now.